Thank you. Well, I'll explain where Christy is in just a second. Gronstahl, where are you? I got your 10. I'll take care of it, make sure it gets the...
I got your check.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Hey, listen, it's great to be back home, and it's great to be with my Democratic family. I want to say a word about our special guest. Representative Castro is an incredible leader in the House of Representatives. He has an incredible future. And I'm going to be the first to suggest in Iowa, I'm sure this has been suggested in Texas, that Representative Castro think very, very seriously about taking on Ted Cruz. I have a few bucks in my pocket. I'll give them to you as a first contribution. I won't give you Gronstahl's 10, but I'll give you my money. He is an incredible leader, and I have become a good friend of his and a good friend of his brother, who is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and just such great talent, and it speaks, I think, incredibly well of the future of our party, that we have folks like the Castro brothers who want to put their name on the ballot, who work hard for working families. So, Congressman, thank you very much for spending the time with us tonight. And I want to thank Dave Loebsack specifically for the work that he does on veterans. You know, you may think of Dave as a congressman who focuses on education because of his past, but he really is very much committed to making sure that our military is well supported and that those who have served in uniform are well served by their country when they finish their service. So, Congressman, thank you very much for your service. And I'm incredibly proud of the candidates that we have for a Congress that will join Dave. He is a very lonely guy in the Iowa delegation, and we're going to give you some help. We're going to give you some company. We've got three great candidates, and you heard them tonight. Kim, Monica, and Jim are just fabulous, and we need to make sure in each of our congressional districts we do everything we possibly can to make sure that they are part of a new a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, because the next President of the United States is going to want to work with the House of Representatives. And just a word about my good friend Patty Judge. You know, folks, it's not easy. It's not easy to run for higher office. It's not easy to run statewide. This is a big state. It's not easy to run against a guy, Patty said, 42 years. Actually, Chuck's been in office, a continuous office, of one form or another for 58 years. I mean, 58 years. I was in grade school when he got elected. And he stopped doing his job. His job as chair of the Judiciary Committee is to make sure that qualified people are given a fair shot and a fair hearing. Judge Garland is absolutely qualified. He's eminently qualified. He deserves to be on the court. So if Chuck doesn't want to do the job, he should get the hell out of the way and let Patty take his seat. And as a former state senator and as a former governor, I can't tell you how important it is that we keep Mike Gronstahl not just in his position as a state senator, but as the great leader he is of the Iowa Senate. But he needs a friend. He needs somebody that he can go across the rotunda and actually get legislation passed and prevent bad legislation from passing. And that means we need Mark Smith as our next speaker. I could get started on our governor, but I'm not tonight. That's not for tonight. Hey, I was a little nervous about this presentation tonight. And Andy, I know I got to fit within the time, but give me a chance just to tell two stories. The first story has to do with the people that I think about when I was running for office and when I am helping others who are running for office. I put in my mind people that are special to me, people that I care deeply about. And I have told this story outside of Iowa a multitude of times because it says a lot about Iowans and it says a lot about rural folks and it says a lot about the people that make this country the greatest nation on earth. As a former governor, I had many tasks and many responsibilities, but the most sacred and significant was as commander-in-chief of our National Guard. It was that job where I had to go to the going-away ceremonies when these brave young men and women were separated from their families and told that they had to go halfway around the world to put themselves in harm's way to make us back home safer, separating themselves from family and friends and comfort to months of danger. And I also had the great joy of being part of welcoming them back home. No more joyous event in the world than seeing a father reunited with his family or a mother reunited with her family or a mother welcoming back a son or a daughter or a parent seeing a child for the very first time. An incredible, joyful time. But as governor, you also had the responsibility of dealing with those families whose loved ones did not come back. And I remember 41 such occasions when I was governor. The one I share with you tonight is about people that I think about when I think about who the next president and who elected officials ought to be. Bruce Smith was in the National Guard for over 20 years. He was a pilot, a helicopter pilot. He was from West Liberty, small town, eastern Iowa, married for more than 20 years, a wonderful wife, two wonderful children. And he left his family, not for his first tour, not for his second tour, but his third tour of duty. And he went off to Iraq, and his job in the midst of the conflict in Iraq was to ferry people from one neighborhood to another. I suspect Congressman Lobsack's been over there in Iraq, and he knows what I'm talking about. It was so dangerous that you couldn't drive people from one neighborhood. You literally had to fly them by helicopter. On one fateful day, the helicopter Bruce was commanding was hit with a handheld missile. And as it started to go down, it was explained to me, he had just a brief second where he could maneuver that chopper in a way that potentially could put himself and his co-pilot at great risk, but potentially save the people in the back, or conversely, maybe increase his chances of survival, but put those in back at greater risk. He did what he was trained to do. He did what you would expect a small-town Iowa guy to do. He put himself and his co-pilot at greater risk, and he and his co-pilot died that day. But 17 people walked away from that crash alive. And I had to call and talk to his wife. You know, I give a lot of speeches, and it's something that I enjoy doing, but finding the right words on that occasion escaped me. I started thinking about faith and thoughts and prayers and how difficult this must be. And this wonderful woman, in the midst of my stumbling around trying to find the right words, stops me in mid-sentence and she says, "Governor, don't worry about this." She says, "I've got this figured out." And I thought to myself, well, that's incredible. You've just heard within the last 24 hours that your life is turned upside down, that you have a part-time job, you're now going to have to raise these two beautiful children by yourself, and you've lost your best friend. How could you have this figured out? She said, "The way I have it figured, Governor, those 17 people needed more Bruce in that split second than I'll need him the rest of my life." Now, when I think about elections, I know that elections have consequences. And I know the person that we elect as President of the United States, as Commander-in-Chief, the person in charge of putting Bruce Smiths of the world in harm's way, I want them to think about people like Bruce Smith. I want them to think and remember and reflect on the fact that there are people like Bruce who are willing to sacrifice themselves because they believe it's their responsibility, it's their duty, they believe in this country, and they believe they have an obligation to it. I want them to remember people like Mrs. Smith who are equally incredible, because they too understand that a great nation oftentimes requires sacrifice, and sometimes that sacrifice is requested from in equal shares. So the decision we make about who we elect matters to people like Bruce Smith and his wife. I want you to think about someone in your life. It may be a family member, it may be a friend, it may be a coworker, it may be someone outside of your sphere of influence, but someone that is meaningful to you. And I want you to think about their future and how comfortable you are in putting that future in the hands of someone like Donald Trump. And I want you to work harder than you have ever worked before, because this election is indeed, without any question, the most important election of our lifetime. Madam Chair, just one more story, and then I'll get off. And that has to do with Hillary Clinton, the person I support, the person we support, our party supports, to be that president, to be that person that cares about Bruce and Olivia Smith. And you will forgive me if I go back in time. 1998 was a pretty important year to me. And I think it was an important year for the state. And if you remember, in that campaign of 1998, when I ran for governor, in July of 1998, we were out of money. John Norris knows this. He was involved with the chair of the party, and he was concerned about my campaign. Jackie Norris was trying to raise the money. We were out of money, and I was thinking about the possibility of having to close the doors of our campaign for a brief period of time so that we didn't have to pay staff, and because we didn't have money to pay staff. And Christie came in to the office one day, and she said, "Well, don't worry about this." She said, "I have an idea." And I said, "What is that, honey?" She said, "Well, I'll call Hillary." And I said, "Hillary who?" And she said, because I had gone through that call list that Jackie had prepared for me multiple times. There was no Hillary on there. There was a Harry Bookie who took my calls three or four times, but after about the fifth call, it was enough already. I said, "There's no Hillary on that list." She goes, "Hillary Clinton." I said, "The First Lady of the United States." "Yeah, yeah, yeah." "So you're going to call her. What are you going to ask her to do, honey?" "Well, I'm going to ask her to do a fundraiser." I said, "Honey, you realize that we haven't elected a Democrat in the state in 30 years, and I'm 23 points behind. Why would she even consider doing a fundraiser for us?" "Oh," she said, "she will do it." Well, it's obvious that Christie's a lot smarter than I am. You all know that. Next thing I know, we have a fundraiser plan in Washington, D.C., and this is great. And Congressman, you know, when you think about the First Lady of the United States, you think about a fundraiser in Washington, D.C., probably you have never had this experience because you're popular, but it started in a room about this size, and eventually it sort of, you know, kind of shrunk a little bit and divided the room and more dividers, and before you knew it, there were about as many people as our table there to the fundraiser. But we raised enough money to keep the doors open. So fast forward to October, just about this time, John Cacciatore, who did a tremendous job for me as my campaign chairman, comes into my office one day and he says, give it up for John. He says, "Senator," I was senator at the time, he said, "Senator, we don't have any money for TV in Council Bluffs or Sioux City, and we don't have any money for, Jerry Messer's been asking for it in the Quad Cities, we don't have any money for TV ads in the Quad Cities, and we can't do any radio, and we're not going to be able to make a single phone call on Election Day because we just don't have the money." So I look at John. I go, "Oh, we're still 23 points down." I said, "John, can we win?" Of course, he lied. I said, "Yeah, we got a shot. We got a shot." He said, "We're going to do tracking polls. We're going to see if there's any movement in the race." So we did a tracking poll, went from 23 to 15, and then we did one 2 days later, went from 15 to 8. We sent those tracking polls out all across the country, including to Washington, D.C., including to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And following that last tracking poll, all of a sudden, money came in from all over the country. John comes into the office one day, and he says, "Do you know Bob Rubin?" I said, "You mean the Treasury Secretary?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "No, I don't know. I'm a state senator. I'm from Mount Pleasant, Iowa. How do I know Bob Rubin?" He says, "Well, I'm just wondering, because," he said, "I just got a check for $17,000 from Bob." I said, "Well, cash it. Cash it, man. You know, cash." So all of a sudden, we have got money to do TV, and we got money for radio. Christie got a wonderful ad, and we had, I think we did like 600,000 phone calls on Election Day, and the election moved from being 8 points down to even the weekend before the election. So lesson number one in all of this: do not assume that any candidate who's behind is not capable of winning. We can win every single one of these races we're talking tonight, and we have to work to make sure that happens. So we need one major push. We need to get everybody excited about the election. We wanted to get those phone calls made. We wanted to get those ballots collected. We wanted to make sure everybody got to vote. So we needed a star to come. And the Castro brothers were, I don't know, you guys were probably still at high school then, so I couldn't ask you to come. And Hillary showed up, and she did a fundraiser. So you have to ask yourself, why would Hillary Clinton, in a state that hadn't elected a Democrat in 30 years, for a candidate who was 23 points behind, why would she do a fundraiser in July? Why would she make sure that $500,000 got into that campaign at a critical moment? And why would she spend time here in Des Moines when she could have gone to 34 states with a Senate race, 434 other House districts, or 33 states that had governor's races? Why did she come here? Here's why, and here's what you need to know about her. She came because 24 years before that date, before that election in 1998, she was a young lawyer in Washington, D.C., working for John Doerr and the Watergate investigation of President Nixon. And she shared office space in a small cubbyhole that John Doerr had established, and her job was to communicate with her partner in that office about what the Senate and the House were learning from listening to the tapes. That partner, that person in that office, happened to be Christie's brother, Tom Bell. They've struck up a friendship. Tom, in 1996, came down for my son Jess's graduation. And as Mike Gronstahl probably remembers, I had indicated I was going to leave politics. My brother-in-law took me aside the night before the graduation ceremony, and he said, you can't leave politics. In fact, you have to run for governor. And again, I said, well, geez, I wasn't born here. We haven't elected a Democrat in 30 years. I'm from Southeast Iowa. Nobody knows who I am. And I said, even that, people are confused between me and a pickle. It's just, it's just not going to work. He said, no, you've got to do this. You've got to do this. He went out the morning before the graduation ceremony, and his heart malfunctioned, and he passed away and died. And I decided at that point in time I would dedicate my life to doing what he asked me to do. But I needed help. So 24 years after a friendship was established and 2 years after that friend had passed away, Hillary Clinton showed up for me, for you, for us in Iowa. She did it out of loyalty. She did it out of friendship. She did it because she cared about the people in this state. Now, I tell you this because it's important for all of you to understand who she really is. In this game of politics, we have a tendency to paint folks with a fairly broad brush, and the reality is not everybody knows the Hillary Clinton I know. But you need to know that if she comes here and has come here and says to you she's going to raise the minimum wage, she's going to protect a woman's right to choose, she's going to make Supreme Court choices that are progressive in terms of our values, that she's going to defend the Constitution, she's going to make sure that when we put people in harm's way that there's a very good reason, she's going to take care of veterans. When she talks about a stronger economy, when she talks about America's place in the world, when she talks about stronger together, here's what I can tell you. She will remain loyal to those promises. She will remain loyal to you. And it is up to every single person in this room to vow tonight for the next 25 days, the only thing we're going to concentrate on, the only thing we're going to concentrate on is making sure that we are proud of our president on our president-elect on November 8th. We will not be proud of our president-elect on November 8th if we do not do our job and make sure that Hillary Clinton is the next president of the United States. I am. So if you folks care about this country, and you care about our values, and you care about our Constitution, and you care about working families, there is only one choice. Only one choice, Iowa. We have got to deliver for Hillary Clinton. Let's get to work.